Hello everyone and welcome to the Middle East and North Africa Social Policy Network podcast series. We hope you enjoy this episode. Make sure to subscribe to our channel and follow us on social media. For more information, please visit our website at www.menasp.com.
Welcome to the fourth and final podcast on the role of social policy in promoting human security in the MENA region. This was part of a roundtable organized by both the HCCA Thematic Group Human Security and the Early Career Researchers Initiative at the MENA Social Policy Network. My name is Tamara Cole, and together with Dr. Noor Alabas, I'm an ECR representative. The podcast series consists of four parts. In each, we have one speaker presenting his or her thoughts on the topic. For this podcast, I would like to introduce Dr. Nathalie Milbach-Boucher. Dr. Nathalie Milbach-Boucher is a strategic senior advisor at the regional hub of the United Nations Development Programme in Amman. She is a development economist with over 20 years of experience in policy advice, research and programmatic support on poverty and inequality, social protection, and amongst others, inclusive growth and sustainable development. Previously, she managed UNDP's sub-regional facility for the Syria crisis and led UNDP's work on inclusive growth and the MDGs and SDGs in the Arab region.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Rana, colleagues from the SDA. This was very, very refreshing. And actually, when I was requested to intervene in this particular webinar, I didn't know where to start from. As UNDP, of course, we are investing in research, in analysis, and of course, the series of human development reports are part of this work stream, but we are also basically mandated to support countries in advancing the sustainable development agenda. So I'm going to go over this presentation. I'm going to try to be brief, but I do believe that some of the points that I will be making will be speaking and resonating very much with some of the points and even questions that were raised earlier by Dr. Gasper, by Dr. Mahmoud and Walid. So let me start from the concept, and that's where Dr. Gasper started with. Before coming to the and joining this webinar, I said, okay, where do we stand? Because one point I would like to make is that actually, in our daily work as UNDP, we are not necessarily using the human security concepts, you know, as a programmatic or as a policy concept. We have moved actually towards other frameworks that I will be introducing to you. But I was just thinking it was good to try to have a human security reading of some of the global development, human development reports that were produced by UNDP. And actually there is a storyline around human security. And over the years, I would say, even if the concept itself is not used necessarily systematically, there's been a storyline and a real effort to get deeper and to probe deeper in human security, but particularly also in its implication for policy making, for solutions making. So it's true that when we start with the Human Development Report 1994, then the concept was nascent, and it really created and generated a shift from the state security to people security and community security. So it was really, I would say, a paradigm shift in terms of approaching human security. 10 years later, actually, another human development report was produced that really, in fact, dig deeper in this notion, but moving to the notion of vulnerability. And I think Dr. Gasper mentioned about the nexus between human security and vulnerability. But why this move? Perhaps because the concept of vulnerability, which obviously is critical today, was providing also lending itself for policy actions in a way that that could sustain human progress in a kind of positive way. So moving to 2019, I was reading again the Global Human Development Report 2019, and this report brought at the forefront of the discussion this issue of inequalities in capacities, entrenched and structural inequalities, also mentioning and stressing that inequalities are a key obstacle to enhancing human security and beyond that, human resilience and development. And the last report, and of course, as UNDP, I cannot overlook the last report, and I think the latest interventions were very much connecting the dots, is saying one thing from my own reading, is saying one thing, is that human security and planet security cannot be disconnected. Basically, now the deal and the biggest challenge for researchers, but also for policymakers, is to find a kind of a smart balance and integration as well between, I would say, social welfare and ecological welfare. So I think this is something that needs to be taken into account increasingly, possibly even within the field of social policy making. So I was just saying that as such, the human security concept globally was not necessarily used as a guiding programmatic type of concept or framework. Actually, but very much in line with the notion of human security and the underpinning vulnerability, threats, risk dimension surrounding it, what the UN and UNDP has been an important contributor has really started to work on three interconnected framework. A first framework is a what we call leaving no one behind. And this framework is really speaking to the need to look at the way people are deprived, excluded, so to speak, in various areas, and how these various areas of exclusions are actually intersecting with each other. I will get back to this, but basically, this leaving no one behind framework is focused essentially on five exclusion drivers that, of course, are critical from a UN human security lens. One is on discrimination-based factors based on status, identity, and so forth, geography, but also governance, the socioeconomic status of people, of course, but also the exposure of people to shocks and fragility. So it's a very comprehensive framework that can help in an integrated manner to identify the main drivers of exclusion of some people. The other big framework, which has emerged in a context where basically uncertainty, shocks, threats are becoming so-called the new normal, is a resilience building framework. And here I will not get into the conceptual issues too much, but basically what this framework is emphasizing is the need to look at risk and threats from a multidimensional perspective and not in a siloed way where risks are considered individually, but it's really to look at risk from a systemic perspective, acknowledging that the threats, the risks that people are facing and communities are facing are interconnected. And I do think that COVID-19 has really exposed this interconnectedness between risk. Another key dimension is the need to think about building resilience is not the business of government. It's a whole of society approach, and what this framework is pushing for is really multi-stakeholder approach, with actually a strong emphasis on local level, on community engagement, the development also of dialogue mechanisms for prevention. And then another pillars, of course, the pillar of like building resilience people, but also communities and systems resilience capacities to various kind of shocks and threats. So basically, resilience, risk-informed development, and leaving no one behind, I would say, if I have to summarize, is a kind of a building blocks to look at sustainable development from a human security, human resilience, and I would say simply say, from a resilience building perspective. And actually I work very much on resilience issues and the SDGs, as Tamara was saying. And in 2019, I actually wrote a paper to see to which extent the SDGs, everybody knows about the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals and their 169 targets were speaking to resilience building imperatives for sustainable development. And I was just going through the various targets. There are 169 targets that are actually calling for policy action on various fronts. And many of these targets are really speaking to the development of individual community and government and systemic resilience capacity. So it's just way of thinking, of saying that when we are talking about human security, and I think this is a key message from the UN and UNDP in particular, is that we should not forget that there is right now an agenda, which is called the 2030 Agenda and the SDGs, that can provide an operational framework for addressing human security and human resilience issues in a very integrated manner, once again, because as just mentioned, we cannot think about human security, even in 1994, was defined across seven areas, right? We could add more. What perhaps at this time was not seen as critical is the way all these areas of threats are intersecting and interconnected. So I think that what the sustainable, the 2030 agenda is bringing is really a push for integrated approach, where basically human security is not only about basic needs, food and so, no, it's food security threats are interconnected with climate threats and so forth and so forth. So it's, we need integrated approaches. And COVID-19 has really exposed the need for these integrated approaches to resilience and human security building. I will not get into the details or the results of more than 140 socioeconomic impact assessments conducted by UNDP and those across the globe, which is really showing that COVID-19 has challenged human security in all its dimensions. But not only this, that the first round of impacts of COVID beyond health impacts can also generate new risk. We are talking now about looming debt crisis, more social protests, possibly, and so forth. So just to say that even the apprehension of threats and risks needs to be seen from a dynamic perspective. So this is really something I wanted to share there, which is actually echoing some of the points that were made earlier. So just to go back, and it's interesting that Dr. Gasper started with, of course, the Arab Human Development Report, because the question was, what is the traction of this concept in the region? If there is one region where the concept of human security got some traction, is certainly the MENA region, the Arab region. And it's interesting to see that indeed the report was embracing the seven dimension of threats, including occupation, worth pointing it. Interesting to see also in the way there was no specific ranking, if I do remember, but interesting to see also that in 2009, the environment was placed as first in the list of threats. The ecological threats was coming first before the state, before growth, before health, and so forth. So it's quite interesting. And of course, we can say, well, this is certainly, this should be read again with a fresh look, and perhaps with a more integrated perspective. And this is perhaps where UNDP is looking, what UNDP is looking at now, the intersect between these different threats, with this notion that social policies alone, climate policies, economic policies, will not be able to tackle human security if they are not speaking to each other in a consistent manner. To answer Dr. Gasper's question about what is, has this report inspired more thinking, more research in the MENA region? Actually, UNDP was just before COVID on the verge of producing a new Arab Human Development report, and in preparing for such a report, some papers have been produced that, from my perspective at least, are really speaking or are really a natural follow-up to this human security report of 2009. So there is actually a research paper which is looking at leaving no one behind towards inclusive citizenship in Arab country. And actually the notion of citizenship as well could be particularly relevant for a human security research agenda. I was mentioning about the leaving no one behind framework, and this slide is providing is highlighting how we are approaching this five-factor framework in the MENA region, and how we are analyzing key factors of exclusion, with, of course, these key factors interacting strongly in the most fragile, including conflict-affected countries in the region. Another follow-up to this is that, and I think it was mentioned by Dr. Gasper as well, is that when we are approaching human security, and because there is a strong element of subjectivity in human security, it's extremely important in this, when we want to shape programming, when we want to shape policy advice, it's very important to listen to people. And that's something where that UNDP has been very much investing in recently, and actually as a background to this research paper I was mentioning before. UNDP interviewed about 6,000 Arab citizens across various countries to get the perspectives on these various exclusion drivers I was mentioning before. And it's very interesting to see. And it would be good actually to compare this, as Dr. Gasper was saying, with the actual data. But very interesting to see how the various dimensions of human security were felt as significant gaps in the region still now, and this was before COVID. So I would assume that the data, those perception surveys findings would have even shifted elsewhere after COVID. Again, another point, I think it was mentioned by Dr. Walid, for UNDP, clearly human security cannot be disconnected from the tremendous threats coming from the climate challenge in the Arab region. And actually, we have recently established a fully-fledged SDG climate facility, which is really trying to promote climate-friendly solutions that can also deliver on other dimensions of human insecurity, be it in the areas of livelihoods and so forth. So the idea is really important, even when we think about social policies, to think about the risk and the specific vulnerabilities that people are facing in the context of climate change in the region and its implication on water scarcity and all the things, all the threats we are very well aware of. So this is something I wanted to share, at least when it comes to the conceptual thinking and the policy thinking. Another dimension, and I think I've been very much exposed to this, as mentioned by Tamara, I was heading the sub-regional facility for the Syria crisis. And in the context of this huge protracted displacement and humanitarian this crisis, UNDP has spearheaded a resilience-based approach, which is looking, of course, at the vulnerabilities that not only people, but communities and systems in countries hosting refugees are facing. So it's a very comprehensive approach with this notion that ultimately the resilience of people or security of host communities and refugees depends on needs to be approached from with a very comprehensive, very comprehensively. So we are looking at both individual, community, and systemic capacities, and all the partners responding to this crisis are working at the individual level on education, psychological support. There is a strong focus, and I think that's critical from a human security perspective, on social cohesion, building social cohesion at the levels of communities, but also strengthening the capacities of ministries, of municipalities to manage the various impacts of the refugee crisis for the benefits of all. Just to say that again, an important shift that in the way we are approaching sustainable development is through developing databases on what we call crisis risk dashboards, where we are looking at the constellation of indicators of conflicts, but also drivers. And you can see from the screen, we are looking at the rule of law, we are looking at marginalization, we are looking at inequality, violent extremism, but also the environment. So just to say that we are approaching this from a very comprehensive perspective. Let me just finish by a few considerations, if you allow me, because I think this was the main topic of this seminar, a few considerations regarding, well, the nexus between social protection and human security. I would say that the two notions are speaking to each other conceptually, because first is that we need a kind of multidimensional risk approach to social policy making and social protection policy making in particular, which means that social protection programs, for whatever they are, need to be designed in light of the multiple but also overlapping risks, threats, and vulnerabilities that people are currently facing. So this paves the way for creating new indexes, composite indexes, you know, overlying multi-dimensional vulnerability indexes with the mapping of, you know, geographical mappings of climate risk or environmental fragility, for instance, where we want to provide social protection support. Social protection policies and programs needs to be context and conflict sensitive. Because we hear that social protection and policies can do a lot for reducing inequalities and by this way to reduce prevent conflict. But what we see on the ground, and especially in the context of crisis, is that we have to be extremely careful. And that conflict sensitivity is very, very important. In Lebanon, for instance, where social protection system is weak, a lot is going in the country through humanitarian social assistance, so to speak. And the way host communities and refugee communities are benefiting from this support has a lot of implications in terms of social cohesion and in terms of potential risk of conflicts. And that's the reason why we actually developed a tension monitoring system in Lebanon to be able to grasp this risk. Inclusiveness. And I think that's a point that was raised by, if I'm not mistaken, by Dr. Mahmoud. I think, indeed, we are talking about inclusiveness now because we see that in the MENA region, the social protection system are excluding a lot of people, right? Including, as you said, people on the move, migrants, refugees, and so forth, and informal workers, as we know. But inclusiveness should be seen not only from the viewpoint of coverage, so to speak, also this is important, but also to go along with legal and policy reforms that tackle the root cause of social exclusion. Policy changes, legal changes. Another dimension, and I think it was also mentioned, is the need to reconsider in the region this transition from universal, but as we say, inefficient, regressive subsidy schemes to narrowly poverty-targeted safety nets. I think we need to rethink that from a conflict prevention perspective, for sure, from a cost-effectiveness perspective. And clearly, there is a need also to rethink what would it mean in the Arab region to set up those social protection force that the UN and others have been talking about. So this is definitely an area for further research. Inclusiveness, but also gender responsiveness. And recently, UNDP and women joined forces to develop a global gender response tracker to see whether the social protection response at large, the policy response to COVID-19 in the region were gender responsive or not, especially in the area of protection, economic security of women, social protection, that's measures are they taking care of unpaid care, the unpaid care burden, for instance, violence against women. And the result, the finding were quite striking, where out of 225 measures, they were but only 53 measures that were gender sensitive along these different lines. Governance, I think that's another area where the UN system and UNDP is likely to invest is the governance of social protection systems. The responsiveness of systems to people's demands and needs, including shock responsiveness, if we consider that people are vulnerable to shocks, accountability and transparency, including strong participatory monitoring and evaluation systems, but in a cross-cutting manner, what I think is really important, and we see it every day because the situation is so fluid. We need for a continuous investment in data and evidence building on social protection needs, of course, but also, and I want to stress the point, in the analysis of the impact of social protection policies, the socioeconomic impact, but also maybe the environmental impact, the impact on social cohesion, the impact on conflicts, but also the impact of other policies on social protection needs. And that's, again, a point I want to stress. We cannot claim or even make the working assumption that social protection policy are going to work to reduce inequality and prevent conflict if other policies are running against the tide. So I think this integrated approach is very important. Of course, what we saw in the recent period is that there are a lot of opportunities to be tapped from the digital area, so to speak, and the use of digital systems and technology to improve the governance of social policies and social protection policies. That's something that needs to be looked at as well. And again, multi-stakeholder approach are clearly needed for all the reasons mentioned. Last but not least, in the context of displacement, and I think it was mentioned by Mahmoud, obviously there is a need to strengthen what we call the humanitarian development nexus in the area of social protection, where basically, even from a conflict prevention perspective in some countries, it's very critical for humanitarian partners to also use their comparative advantages, their capacities to strengthen national systems and to make sure that ultimately the social protection systems in the countries, in the host countries, are contributing to build resilience of all people. And as mentioned again, integrated approach, and this is an area for further research and programmatic work at least. How can we better link social protection programs to other key services, to economic inclusion and empowerment, and also, and that's an area where UNDP is investing also, to disaster risk management and the management, sustainable management of natural resources and the environment. I will stop there. Thank you so much for your attention. I had to rush a bit, but I hope some of the points were interesting to share or resonating with the work that colleagues are doing.
With that, I would like to thank Dr. Nathalie Milbach-Boucher for sharing her thoughts. The presentation can also be found in the link in the description. We would like to thank all of you for listening. If you're interested in the other presentations, please have a look at the other podcasts. We hope you will join us again next time.